So I struggled with what to call this sermon, because examine yourselves, I feel like I've done that before, and this is not really quite that, but it was as good as I could come up with. And it comes from a discussion that we had on our Wednesday night class when we were finishing up the book of 2 Corinthians, and Paul was telling the Corinthians that they needed to examine themselves. And if you think about the kind of the what 2 Corinthians was all about, especially the very end of it, the Corinthian church was a church that was divided. There were people that had issues, that were fighting and fussing with each other. They were divided. And part of their division was about trying to make themselves feel good about themselves by knocking others down. And we talked a lot about that. And one of the people they were trying to knock down was Paul. They tried to find fault in everything that Paul did. And finally, at the very end of 2 Corinthians, he tells them that they needed to examine themselves. And what he's really saying is, you spend a lot of time looking at other people, pointing out faults, trying to find fault. You need to look at yourself. You need to examine yourself. And so this scripture is about that, but what I want to do is think about, how do you examine yourself? How do you examine yourself? You know, it's hard enough to examine ourselves and figure out if we're doing the right things, right? If you go to your doctor and he asks you how you're living, how you're taking care of yourself, well, you can go down and say, well, okay, I've get a little exercise, you know, I try to get, you know, some cardio, I do some walking or biking or whatever that is. I take vitamins, and I'm taking some medications for my cholesterol or my blood pressure or whatever those things are. You know, we kind of can go down and we can kind of list some things that we're doing that we think are going to help with our overall health. But when you do exercise, is your heart in it? I go to the gym 5 days a week. I don't like it. Not gonna lie, I don't like it. I'd much rather just turn over and go back to sleep. There's guys that come in there and they're all excited, and I'm thinking, you are nuts. You are absolutely crazy. There is nothing fun about this. I do this because it's good for me. But I don't do it because I enjoy it. But when we examine ourselves and we start looking, what motivates you to do the things you do? Why do you do the things related to your spiritual well-being that you do? What motivates you? That's a lot harder to figure out. Have you ever had somebody ask you, why did you do something? And you feel like you've got to give an answer. It's pretty hard sometimes, isn't it? Because sometimes we're not exactly sure why we did what we did. And if you're examining yourselves, you've got to stop and think about that. Well, that's what I want us to think about this morning a little bit. Okay? In Matthew chapter 7, verses 3 through 5, it's the story of, or the parable, I guess you would call it, or lesson that Jesus is teaching about judging others. It says, why do you seek the speck that is in your brother's eye, who do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there's a log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. One of the things that little section of scripture points out is that it is much, much easier to look at somebody else and find the faults, to examine them and say, here's some problems you got. Notice it talks about those being specks. We can notice the smallest little details about other people's lives. But it says we've got a log in our own eye. Something huge, and we don't even notice it. Examining ourselves is not an easy thing. Okay? It is not an easy thing. So the core of our sermon this morning is about examining our motivations. Okay? It's about trying to understand why do we do what we do. And the Bible is very clear that there are motivations for people who think they're serving God, but they're really not. And even though they might appear to be doing the right things, because their motivations were wrong, they're not found pleasing and acceptable to God. And that's what we want to watch out for. So I've got a few examples this morning. Let's start off with the parable of the rich young ruler. You may remember this passage. The rich young ruler, Mark chapter 10, verses 17 through 22, comes to Jesus and he wants to know, what do I need to do? And Jesus says, well, you need to keep the commandments. And he names off a few of them. And the young man says, I've done those since my youth. What more do I need to do? And so Jesus tells him, well, you need to sell all of your possessions and come follow me. And he marches away rather unhappy because he had a lot of possessions. Well, there's some things here that I want you to think about. Have you ever wondered about the young man's answer that he had kept the commandments since his youth? He'd never made a mistake. He'd never missed one of those commandments. He'd never failed in his ability to do the right thing. Romans 3:23 tells us that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. He didn't keep all the commandments. Not all the time. He may have done a pretty good job. I don't know. But he had not kept them perfectly. Nobody did. If they had, there would have been no need for Jesus to die on the cross. So we know that can't be true. And I was thinking about it, well, why didn't Jesus point that out to him? Why didn't he get on him and say, well, you've not done all of these things perfectly. Why didn't he go there? Why didn't he talk about that? Well, maybe it's because Jesus knew he had a bigger problem. Maybe the keeping of the commandments wasn't his big problem. Maybe there was a problem that the young man didn't see about himself. You know, we typically, when we look at this, talk about the danger of being wrapped up in possessions, of riches. We talk about that a lot. And it's true. It's true, and that's what Jesus goes on to talk about. And Jesus also talked about the fact that having possessions makes it hard to worship God, to serve God. Why is that? Matthew 6:24 tells us that no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Think about that language for a moment. Two masters. You either hate one or love one, or you will be devoted to one and despise one. In both cases, what he's using are extremes, right? Polar opposites. There's no middle ground there. There's no middle ground. And I think the language is to remind us that there is no middle ground with God. Remember in Revelation, the concept of lukewarm. Lukewarm was something God just found despicable. He spewed it out. He would rather you be hot or cold. One or the other, but you can't be in the middle. The problem that the young man has, this rich young ruler, was that he was motivated by money and possessions. He wasn't motivated by a love of God. Like so many of the Jews, he believed that serving God meant that he would be successful, that he would be rewarded in an earthly way. So he kept the commandments, at least as he saw them, because he wanted to continue to be rich and successful. He didn't do it because of a love of God. The question for you this morning is, as you examine yourself, what's your motivation? Are you motivated by money and success and possessions? Or are you motivated by a true love of God? We can think we're doing the right things. This young ruler said he kept the commandments, but his motivation wasn't right. He did not love God. He loved possessions more. God says you can't do that. You can't love them and love me. You either love one and hate one, or you follow one and despise the other. That's going to be. So there's one example. Being motivated by money and possessions, by earthly things. Are we guilty of that? Well, something when we examine ourselves, we need to carefully question ourselves and honestly answer. Because you'll notice, rich young man walked away. Jesus told him what was necessary, and he didn't want to do that. Because what he wanted was absolute love of God. And he walked away from it. How about the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector? I tend to use this one a lot. I realize that. It's because it speaks to me a lot. It speaks to me about being careful about getting too full of self. Becoming a hypocrite. The Pharisee became a hypocrite. He told God he wasn't like other men, and then he goes on to identify the types of people he was better than. He says, I thank you I'm not like these other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. So he's picked out people that he's better than. Okay. Have you ever thought about his list? Those are kind of extremes, aren't they? You could walk into a prison. They can tell you, yeah, these people are here because they did these horrendous things. Well, I'm better than them. Does that make you good? Just because you are better than some of the worst doesn't make you good. But he was okay with that. I'm going to pick out these people. I'm better than them. And then he's going to say, I can even point out some good works I do. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I get. So I fast and I give money. Okay? Well, think about that for a moment. Jesus is using this parable to address the problem of some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt. That's why he was using this parable. If you think about it, what was the motivation of the Pharisee? His was a desire for superiority. He wanted to be better than other people. Everything he did was things that you could say that you're better than somebody else. God was just a mechanism for showing his superiority. I'm better than you. I can stand up and crow about it, pound my chest. I'm better than the adulterers. I'm better than the extortioners. I'm better than the unjust. I'm better than this tax collector. Motivated by a desire for superiority. Romans 12 and verse 3 warns us against thinking we are good. It says, for by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. The problem with starting down the path of being motivated for a desire for superiority is you start to think that you're good. And if you start to think you're good, then the next step is you start to think you're responsible for your salvation. And you just totally leave God out of the equation. You don't need anybody because you're just so good. That's not the fact, folks. We're not that good. You know, that publican, that poor tax collector, wouldn't even look up towards heaven. He recognized he wasn't that good, that he wasn't superior. He recognized that he was not what God was looking for. And he showed his humility, and he showed his desire for God to help him. And Jesus finishes off the parable by asking the question, who do you think went away justified? Who do you think was pleasing to God? The one that put his trust in God, who recognized the need for God in his life, or the one who wanted to be superior to everybody else? Well, again, when we're examining ourselves, are we motivated by just looking better than other people? I've grown up, been in the church my entire life. Looking back, there were people who never missed a Sunday. They could be coughing up a lung and they would have been sitting there, giving it to everybody else. But it was because they would turn around and tell you, I never miss. But you know what? Other than sitting in that spot, I can't remember them ever doing anything else. They filled the space good. They may have always been in it, but they didn't do anything else. They never showed anything else about a love for God, a love for the other brethren, a desire to do God's will and to help, to work. Nothing. But I could say I was there. I never missed. That's a desire for superiority. We've got to make sure that what we're doing isn't just to show off, to look better than somebody else. Our third example is the parable of the talents. If you remember this parable, it's one again that we use a lot. Three men are given opportunities to serve the master. Okay, they're given some amount of money and they're told to go use it. Go use it to the benefit of the master. So the master comes back and there's now a reckoning of what have you done? And the first two had taken what the master had given them, they had used it, and they were able to give back to the master twice what he had given them. And he commends them for it. And then he gets to the third person. And the third person did nothing. He went out, he buried what he was given in the ground, and when the master came back, he dug it up and he gave it back to him. And so the master was kind of like not too happy about that. And I always struggled with this next part. Portion here, he said, he who had received one talent came forward saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. I struggle a little bit with this. Doesn't sound like the master's a very nice girl, a very nice person, does it? Makes it sound like he's kind of a hard guy. Demanding, unfair, unfeeling. I never understood why does the person with the one talent make that excuse? Well, as I thought about it this week, I kind of came to the conclusion that really what he's doing, this one talent person, was he's trying to justify himself. He didn't want to be bothered doing what the master wanted him to do. He had other things he'd rather be doing. So he just uses an excuse that you just ask too much. You're too hard. You're too tough. You want too much out of me. So I do what I got to do for you, but I just want to go on and do what I want to do. You know? He was motivated by a self-seeking attitude. He wanted to do what he wanted to do. And he only did enough for the master that he thought he could get by. If I don't lose the one talent, he can't yell that I lost his talent. I'm going to give back to him what he gave me. But not one little bit more. I'm only going to do the minimum that is required. Just enough that I think I can get by. And if he questions me, it's going to be because you ask a lot. You want too much. You expect too much. I don't want to work that hard. Examine yourselves. Are we guilty of that one? Do we do just what we think we need to do to get by? Anybody besides me ever have a time in school where there was an assignment that you didn't like? And so you kind of figured, you know what? I'm going to do just enough to get by. I was doing my MBA. I had two classes, and I had a final in one, and I had this paper in one. The final was worth like over half of my grade in that class, and this paper was like 10%. Being a statistically minded guy, I did the math and said, you know, this one's way less important than this one is. And so that's what I did. I put very little effort into this, just enough to get by. I figured if I can just pass it, that'll be enough points, it's good enough. That infuriated my professor, because he knew I hadn't put much effort into it. And he kept asking me why. And I made up all sorts of excuses, you know. I even tried the business one, you know, limited resources. I had to allocate my resources accordingly. Yeah, he didn't go for it. He didn't think that was quite the right allocation. Don't we try to treat God that way sometimes? What do I have to do to get by? Is that what we're motivated by? Is that how we serve God? We only do what we think we have to. It doesn't say I have to go to Wednesday night class. It doesn't say I have to be there every Sunday. No, it doesn't. Are you trying to get by with the minimum? Or you really, truly love God and want to serve Him? Question to ask yourself. Last one. The scribes and the Pharisees. Scribes and the Pharisees. Throughout the time that Jesus was out teaching and preaching and working with the people, he had lots and lots of interactions with the scribes and the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And none of them were ever very pleasant. And he very much, in Matthew chapter 23, verses 5 through 7, summed up why that was. They do all their deeds to be seen by others, for they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long. They love the place of honor at feasts and the best seats in the synagogue and greeting in the marketplace and being called a rabbi by others. They liked the attention. They liked the attention. They were motivated by appearances. Have you ever run into somebody who seems to like to be is very much motivated by what people think of them? The kind of car they drive, the way they dress, the way they describe their job at work. I get the biggest chuckle out of the way people can describe what they do at work. My kid never did, and still to this day, I don't think, understand what it is I do at work. For the longest time, they thought I made vacuum cleaners. Yeah, no, I don't make vacuum cleaners. Now I think they think I make windows. I don't make windows either. But some people give this long description of what they do, and it all sounds so important. Right? Why do they do that? Appearances. Make yourself sound important. Make yourself sound good. Well, think about it. Can Christians be guilty of that? Can we pretend to be something we're not? Can we put on a good show, but not really live the kind of life that we're supposed to live? In another passage, Jesus compared these Pharisees and these Sadducees as a whited sepulcher. Nice and pretty and clean looking on the outside and full of dead men's bones on the inside, which for the Jew would have been very, very unclean. That's how he described them. good appearance, but nothing more. Is that us? If we examine ourselves, is there anything really there, or is it just a facade? A few years ago, when the kids were much littler, we went down to Disney, and they have the one park that's got a portion that's like a movie set. And you go walking down, and you're walking down the street, and there's these buildings up on the sides. You know, they talk about all the movies that have been filmed there. But if you walk through the door of one of those buildings, you know what's on the other side? Absolutely nothing. It's just a facade. There's no building there. There's just a front. Nothing any deeper than that. Well, some people, if you get below the surface, is there anything there? As a Christian, if you examine yourself, if you get below the surface, what's there? Is there any real duty to God, love of God, desire to serve God? Or is it just I do enough that I look good to people? People think I'm good. That's good enough? You know, what should our motivation be? Colossians 3, verses 23 through 24 tells us, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. Work heartily. What does that mean? With your heart. With your heart. What does it mean to work with your heart? That means that's where your focus is. That is what is important to you. That's where you place your priorities. That's if I've got to make a choice between this and this, God wins. It's an easy decision. That's what it means to do it heartily. Is that how we serve God? Is it always, no question, God comes first? Or is there, well, I might be able to do that. Which is it? Heartily, for the Lord, not for you, not for possessions, not for appearances, none of those things. For the Lord. Whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Is everything you do truly meant to give God glory? Is that how you live your life? Are the choices you make, the actions you take, all about making God look glorified in the eyes of the world? For them to recognize that you are serving Him, that He is above anything else in your life, that He is the most important thing because He holds the keys of salvation. Is that how you live your life? Well, when you're examining yourself, that's a question to ask, because that's the expectation. I'm going to finish with this. Matthew chapter 22, verses 37 through 38. If you remember this is the case where the lawyer comes up and asks him, what's the great law, great commandment? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. The great and first commandment. And notice it says with all your heart, not some of your heart, all your soul, not some of it, and with all your mind, not parts of it. God's expectation, back to our earlier discussion, you're either with me or you're against me. There is no middle ground. You're either all in or you're all out. When you examine yourself, are you all in? That's the question for you to ask yourself this morning. Are you all in? It's a really important question, because there will be a day of judgment. And the question is, will God know you? Will God know you? Remember the passage? Depart from me, I know ye not. You weren't all in. That means you're all out. I don't know you. You didn't seek to serve me. You didn't put me first. You weren't motivated by giving me glory and helping others to recognize their need for me. You weren't all in. Now you're all out. This morning, we need to each examine our own lives. If we've never obeyed the gospel, you're all out. You need to fix that. And you do that by obeying the gospel. If you've obeyed the gospel, but you examine yourself and you start to recognize, my motivations haven't been serving God. They've been about serving self, gaining possessions, looking good, anything other than being 100% in for God, you need to make some changes in your life. And if we can help anybody in any way, now's the time to do that. While we say, we always say.